Well, hello and welcome back. We're on for another episode of the StoneX Australian Cattle and Beef Market Report. My name is Ripley Atkinson. I'm the Australian Meats and Livestock Manager for StoneX based in Sydney, where we're developing price risk management tools for the Australian livestock industry to help the sector manage market and price volatility with our Australian feeder cattle swap. We're brought to you by StoneX Group, a NASDAQ-listed global financial services network with 100 years of experience in global commodity markets. Remember that the trading of derivatives, such as futures, options, and over-the-counter products or swaps, may not be suitable for all investors. Derivatives trading involves substantial risk of loss, and you should fully understand the risks prior to trading. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future results. Last week, we got a release of data on two really important pieces of information, the ABS Q4 slaughter and production numbers and the Q4 Alpha MLA feedlot brief. Now, both of these combined give us a picture of how 2025 performed across the year, and we're going to get into that today. I'll begin with the three standouts that I believe are the three standout points to consider from the feedlot report and what that meant when we look at how 2025 as a year performed collectively. The first one was the numbers of cattle on feed and how that's just continued to grow. I think as expansions are wrapping up and cattle can actually be placed into the feedlot, you're seeing that continued sustained rise in numbers of cattle on feed. I think the other aspect to think about last year is, I wouldn't call it a rush, but feedlots now, compared to even 5 to 10 years ago, have really shifted and changed the way that they look at utilization rates and how full feedlots are kept or pens are kept. That's been a real change. Last year, cost of gain on cattle was pretty good. Grain generally was quite cheap, second key input into their business, and meat prices generally, or the finished price they were receiving, were solid, and that supported, you know, this real intention to maintain large numbers or high numbers on feed, and obviously keep those pens full. To follow on from that, you know, talking about numbers overall, was the fact that feedlots were at capacity last year, despite the fact that the major feeder supply regions, or at least part of them, or definitely the major feedlot supply regions weren't in drought. You know, so anywhere north of Dubbo last year had an average to well above average season. Cattle were turned off as necessary, but it wasn't forced. The third thing is this growth in grain-fed turnoff, naturally driven by high numbers on feed. But I think it's also a case last year, and we've seen it, and I'll mention it a little later, particularly in two states, the shortening of days on feed. And that's contributing to a rise in the turnoff, but ultimately overall is driven by numbers on feed. When you look at the last 2 years collectively, 24 and 25, they were the fastest growth we've seen in turnoff on record, combined, both combined and individually in their own right. So, yeah, really interesting year last year for the feedlots. I think it's evidence of the growth we've seen in that space. You know, it's coming home to roost in the numbers we're seeing come out of that part of the supply chain. I'll touch on a couple of things, mainly today, how full feedlots were. Now, I think that's the biggest story to come away from this report, to wrap up how we can look at calendar year 25 overall, particularly New South Wales and Queensland. Both of those states combined account for nearly 90%, I should say, of the total numbers on feed nationally. New South Wales and Queensland were both, New South Wales was at record utilization rates in Q4, and Queensland was very close. When you look at New South Wales performance year on year, utilization rates rose 13% from around 82 to 95% to reach record highs. And Queensland was also very similar. Now, I believe this situation is something the beef industry really needs to be aware of and take note of, because it is a risk. As I mentioned just a moment ago, you know, feedlots were full throughout the year, very little pen space available in those two major feeding states, New South Wales and Queensland. Yet our feeder cattle supply regions weren't in dry conditions. And already this year, we've seen parts of those, you know, major feeder supply regions, central, northern New South Wales and southern Queensland, come into dry conditions and feedlots are full. So the question becomes, where do the cattle go? And that's a risk for the beef industry. If cattle can't be put into feedlots because there isn't any available pen space, with the herd size where it's at and the availability and supply of cattle that are going to come forward this year, that's a risk that we need to be considerate of and something that, you know, needs to probably come into people's considerations around marketing and ensuring access to space and things like that. There is a bit of space in Victoria and South Australia at a capacity level. They haven't utilised all of their feedlot space throughout last year. But when you combine both of those states, they account for less than 10% of the total capacity nationwide. So relative to New South Wales and Queensland, which account for 90%, it's not a lot of wiggle room when we're coming into a period, certainly in the first half of this year, that's looking increasingly dry for central, northern New South Wales and southern Queensland. Turn off, that's the other big takeaway, I believe. Looking across the year, in 25, Australia on average processed 70,000 head of grain-fed cattle a week. That was our highest weekly throughput of grain-fed cattle on record. And when you look across the year as grain, or when you look across the year and split grain and grass-fed production, grain-fed accounted for 39% of total beef production in 2025. Now, that was the highest proportion it's had since the rebuild. A really relevant statistic, and I mentioned it in a few other pieces today, it's a further reinforcement and recognition of that structural shift the beef industry's been making over 20 to 30 years towards a grain-fed centric system. Now, you know, we weren't in any kind of rebuild in 2025, whereas when you look at 21-22, we were, so a lot of cattle coming out of feedlots made up the bulk of overall beef production. We weren't like that last year, yet we continued to increase grain-fed production overall, which just gives you an indication more producers are targeting that market and selling stock into that system. At a calendar year level, nationally, we turned out 3.65 million head of cattle from feedlots. That was a rise of 16.5% or 520,000 head year on year. And when you combine, as I mentioned earlier, 24 and 25, grain-fed turnoff has risen by nearly a million head or 40% compared to the lows in grain-fed turnoff set in 2023 in the cycle. So it gives you an idea of how substantial the increase in grain-fed cattle supply to the processors has been in 2 years. Rise of nearly a million head or 40%. Looking at the turnoff data relative to numbers on feed, I think is a really interesting way to understand feeders' buying preferences and how they're actually managing their yard in terms of cattle on feed and the length of programs. And what I mean by that is when you look at Queensland and Victoria, they're great examples of last year. Numbers on feed were firm in Victoria, and in Queensland, they were 12% better than what they were in the December quarter of 2024. But Queensland's actual grain-fed turnoff had risen 22%, and Victorian turnoff had risen 26%. So the discrepancy there between firm numbers on feed or slightly better for Queensland and a 20% plus uptick in turnoff tells you that Queensland and Victorian yards were feeding cattle for shorter periods of time in 2025 than what they had done in 2024. Why is that the case? In Victoria, you could expect to see larger numbers of short-fed northern cattle being put through those Victorian yards last year because there was a lack of supply in Victoria. I expect we'll see similar outcomes in 2026 for the same reason. And in Queensland, it's that structural shift away from longer fed cattle. That really peaked in sort of 22, 23, particularly, you know, mid to long fed Angus and Wagyu. And there has been that continual softening or easing in numbers of those cattle on feed. And that pen space has evidently been taken up by shorter fed cattle, which is encouraging, you know, that increase in turnoff relative to the actual total numbers on feed or the change in numbers on feed year on year. New South Wales, on the other hand, actually saw an uptick in longer fed cattle, whilst WA's turnoff overall doubled year on year, and South Australia was relatively solid. So in those smaller states, we saw some real growth in WA, whereas South Australia, there wasn't a lot of change. There's a few numbers in that, but ultimately, what does this all mean? The first thing, which I think is most important out of any of this stuff we talk about today, is feedlots are full. This is a risk the beef industry needs to be aware of and understand, particularly as dry weather has established itself through those central New South Wales and southern Queensland regions. I've discussed at length on this podcast how relentless the growth in feedlots has been. That is coming home to roost in the number of cattle we're turning out of feedlots now and the proportion of grain-fed stock or grain-fed beef production relative to the total. I think it's also a real highlight, this report, of that structural shift we're seeing overall towards the Australian beef industry focusing and becoming much more feeder-centric rather than the grass-fed industry we're traditionally known as. And I think the last thing which is important to understand at a macro level is because of this increase in turnoff, it's really stabilizing the seasonality to Australian cattle slaughter numbers, which ultimately affects beef production, which ultimately affects exports. The consistency of turnoff out of feedlots is offsetting, you know, any of that sort of seasonality you see to supply availability or, you know, drought impacts on carcass weights, which in the past have really affected beef production numbers. We're not seeing that anymore because of this consistency in turnoff quarter on quarter that's coming out of the feed yards. Moving on to the Q4 ABS slaughter and production numbers, they give us now the full picture of how 2025 performed across the calendar year in all of those key figures, slaughter, production, carcass weights, etc. But beginning with slaughter, back in July last year in the StoneX H2 Outlook report, I called it that slaughter volumes had break records and reached their highest level in nearly 50 years, which they did. 9.28 million head we processed in 2025. That was the highest since 1978, or the third highest annualized slaughter volume on record. Comparing seasonality or year-on-year, slaughter numbers grew by nearly a million head, 983,000 in total, and that equated to growth of 12%. So really significant rise again in 2025 in slaughter throughput. Those figures there surpassed the previous cycle highs set in 2014-15 and also surpassed the slaughter numbers during the drought years of sort of 2018 and 2019. When you look at it at a state level, particularly New South Wales and Victoria, they basically broke modern records, both high since the 1970s, 77 and 78. WA's numbers highest since 2008, so nearly 20 years, 18-year highs in that state. And Queensland was the strongest since 2015, South Australia, the strongest since 2017, prior to the Murray Bridge Thomas Foods plant burning down. So you can see really positive results across the board there. New South Wales and Victoria are clearly the standouts and the highlights, Victoria particularly, I believe. Another point to come away from the slaughter figures, again, reinforce something I've spoken about regularly. Like the feedlots, New South Wales and Queensland processing plants did operate at or near capacity in Q4 again. Victoria, much the same. that's despite, you know, and that was common really throughout the year. If anything, we got closer to capacity the further the year went on. And that's despite the fact that major regions north of Dubbo for beef production and cattle supply weren't in drought. Something we need to be considerate of. We've got full feedlots, processes are at capacity, and we now have drier weather in central and northern New South Wales and southern Queensland. Where do these cattle go? That is a consideration that I don't think the market is entirely pricing into its expectations and outlooks in terms of market performance. I do believe we'll find a way. The beef industry is very good at innovating and being flexible, but I think it's something we need to consider is that capacity issue I've spoken about. Now, when you combine the feedlots being chockers, it's important to understand. I think the last thing is grain-fed slaughter grew at a faster rate year on year than grass-fed did. And I think that's a really good indication of that structural shift. You're just seeing more supply be directed towards the feedlot rather than being sent direct to kill. Now, that's even at a time when grass-fed kill grids last year were very, very solid. And there were a number of producers throughout Queensland, New South Wales that chose to grow those cattle out for obvious reasons. But it's just a really good indication there that switch in terms of when you're comparing grass and grain-fed slaughter, which is growing stronger, and grain-fed definitely did in 25. On to female kill numbers. Last year, we processed 4.9 million females, which was the most number of females Australia had killed since the 70s. And that figure of 4.9 million head surpassed the previous cycle high in 2014-15, and it also surpassed the drought year of 2019 when there was heavy herd liquidation because of that drought. Despite that really sharp rise and overall quite a high number of females processed, the cattle herd actually grew in 2025, despite suggestions from others that we were in liquidation territory, or we were liquidating the herd for the whole of last year. So the herd actually grew, but we killed the most number of females since the 1970s. This dynamic and this situation can be explained by two things. The first one is the productivity and the fertility in the breeding herd is now far superior or better than any other cow herd we've had previously. And what that basically means is we can continue to process high number of females, but because the cow herd is now so fertile relative to, say, the 14-15 cow herd and the 2019 cow herd, we've got this larger supply of replacements coming forwards, which means we can replenish those numbers of cows, which ultimately supports higher supply into the future, despite killing these really large number of females. So productivity and fertility is the first reason. And the second reason, overall, the herd size is at its largest level in 20 to 30 years, which naturally just means there's more availability of younger heifers and younger cows coming in behind those older females that were turned out, which is supporting the overall throughput of cull females, because producers are comfortable knowing they've got numbers behind them to replace those. On production and carcass weights, much like slaughter at a production level, broke records again, surpassed the previous high we set in 24. So numbers grew to 2.87 million metric tons. That was a rise of 12%. Or 300,000 metric tons year on year. And you'll remember slaughter grew 12% year on year as well. So we're seeing similar results here mimicked between slaughter and how that's translating into growth in production. When you look at comparing the lows and the highs in the cattle cycle, beef production's grown by nearly a million metric tons, or 54% in the space of 3 years. That's a really significant figure. Now, we had 40-year lows, or nearly 40-year lows, in slaughter numbers. Production volumes were maintained throughout that period despite lower slaughter because of carcass weights being so elevated. But now, as we see a combination of slaughter rising to near 50-year highs and carcass weights, you know, remaining in line with five-year averages and really in the top 5 years on record, we've seen beef production rise by a million metric tons. That's a really significant achievement, I believe, and it really shows you how much we've grown in terms of production in not very long, in the space of 3 years. As I mentioned, carcass weights firm at 309 kilos per head, much the same as 2024's levels and in line with five-year averages. What I think is important here, and I mentioned it earlier, because of this increasing number of cattle we're seeing being turned out of a feedlot and the proportion they make up of a percentage of the total slaughter numbers, that's continuing to offset, you know, drought-affected cattle or this high proportion of females we're seeing. So in 25, we processed nearly 660,000 extra female cattle compared to 2024's numbers, but carcass weights remained the same. And generally, the rule is females are always lighter than males. But conversely, we had a growth of nearly 520,000 head in grain-fed cattle turned out of feedlots compared to 24. And what that is really telling you is these heavier grain-fed bodies where being sent to process are offsetting these high numbers of females and high numbers of drought-affected cattle, which ultimately flow through to production because carcass weights are staying stable despite, you know, a high proportion of lighter stock being or lighter carcass weights being processed. So it means our production can be consistent. And that's important for brands, you know, exporters, domestic consumers, so they know that they're getting this consistent volume of beef coming at them. And that feedlot sector is really not plugging that hole, but really upholding that and supporting that. What does this data tell you? And this goes for both the feedlot brief information from 25 and also, of course, the ABS slaughter and production numbers. The first thing that I think is really important to highlight, and it's not something we necessarily look at as an industry very often, but it's the fact that the cattle cycle is speeding up really, really quickly. Now, in previous changes between the cycle lows and highs, 4 to 5 years between the low and when we then peaked in slaughter and production numbers was very common. Whereas in this cycle currently, we've gone from lows in 22 to highs in 25, and that's happening within now 3 years. What this is quite significant, because what this tells you is it's a really good indication of how much better we are at managing our livestock in our country through growth rates and turn off land management, carrying capacity, etc. And secondly, I mentioned it earlier, how fertile the cow herd is. So, you know, in previous cattle cycle changes, it took us a lot longer to rebuild and grow those numbers to the previous highs, because the cow herd wasn't as fertile, where now we've really cut 12 to 18 months off, 12 months to 2 years off the cycle low to high period because of how fertile the cows are, which is then delivering us more calves, which is shortening that period between the low and the high in the cycle. Second thing, I've mentioned it a bit, the data really reaffirms my view that in 2026, we're going to see the cattle cycle peak in production and slaughter terms. And following that, in 2027 onwards, we'll begin to see a reduction in slaughter and production numbers as the cycle then moves down the other side. Last one, I think I've mentioned it a bit already, feedlots and processes are at capacity. That was particularly evident in the second half of the year and became even more so than the first. This is a pretty dynamic situation and it is evolving, but it's something that we need to be cognizant of. And I think it's important we're aware of that as a risk, because both those key parts of the supply chain that producers need are you know, foot to the floor and they're full. I'm confident the beef industry will work a way through that, but with dry weather, you know, throughout central northern New South Wales and Queensland, or southern Queensland anyway, it is something to be attentive towards. That's all from those two reports. I think they really highlight how successful 2025 was. You know, as I mentioned, the cycle low in 22 to the high in 25 has been cut by 12 months to 2 years. We broke all kinds of records. Processors and feedlotters handled the volume coming at them, and we really produced a lot of product. And I think it's something to be celebrated, because across the supply chain, it shows efficiency and productivity, right from, you know, cow fertility through to feedlots, handling larger numbers of stock, and the same with the processors. So right across the board, a really positive and successful year. On the next episode, released on Friday, the 13th of March, I'm going to have a chat with Ryan Turner, who's our US Director of Meats and Livestock based in Kansas City. Really looking forward to getting Ryan back on the podcast, hearing his views on the US market and his views on the outlook for that really important nation in 2026. If you haven't listened to what Ryan's got to say, jump back into the episodes we did with Ryan. There was two of them in 2025. They're a great listen. I'd encourage you to do so. It'll paint a bit of a picture of what we're going to discuss in the next episode. So stay tuned for that in a fortnight's time. If today's episode's raised any questions, feel free to reach out to me directly via email to ripley.atkinson@stonex.com, or record a voice note of yourself, where you're from, and the question, and I'll get to answering it in the next episode. Feel free to share this with a mate. There's a fair bit to get through today, but I think it's all really relevant information we should be aware of at a macro level. It doesn't matter where you are in the beef supply chain, it's important to understand the bigger picture. So feel free to pass that on, or if you're enjoying it, give it a follow and a review on your listening platform. But thank you for listening and tuning in, and until next time, take care.